The following podcast is a presentation of Spectrum One, online and on demand at spectrumone.net.
This is Jason Block here on WLTI here on SpectrumOne.net, and I am here with one of my friends here in the game show community who just finished his appearance as one of the 15 teachers in the 2018 Jeopardy Teachers Tournament, as sponsored by Farmers, and he's also a very good friend of mine and a friend of the site too. Lee DeGeorge, how are you, sir?
I am pretty exhausted. This has been a whirlwind week. How's everything by you, Jay?
By the way, is this your biggest press junket to date?
This press junket has been absolutely absurd. I did not really fathom the amount of media that would actually want to talk to me. I mean, I'm really not all that interesting. But I never expected TV and news and radio. It was pretty much the trifecta, and it completely blew my mind.
So, tell us, who you are, where you're from, and what do you do?
My name is Lee DeGeorge, as some of you know. I'm a New York City public school teacher, trivia nerd, game show contestant. This is my fifth. And I have the bug, just like pretty much everyone else does. I love game shows the same, and just love trivia. So if any of you are in the New York City area and you want to play some trivia, just definitely let me know.
So how long have you been a public school teacher?
This is my 13th year, and I've survived. So far, so good.
Well, as you know, my father is a retired public school teacher, and he did it for 50 years. And he did electricity, electronics, and auto shop back in the day. What subjects do you teach?
I teach a little bit of everything. At times, you know, when desperate times call for desperate measures, I've taught almost every subject in the school, but I generally teach both technology and English language arts.
So, if I may ask, every teacher has this story about how you got the calling to become a teacher. How did you become one?
This is kind of a heavy story, actually, but
we're talking about it. This is reality here. I'm just asking the questions.
This is so I'm born and raised in New York City, and at a specific time in my life, I was pretty positive I was going to be a very wealthy businessman. So I was taking business classes. I was doing real well. I had an internship at a major corporation, a major financial corporation. And I was on my way in to an internship day, September 11th, 2001. And I wound up walking away from that moment knowing that I had to make sure that as a future, no one forgot what happened on that day. So I walked away from a job in finance in order to teach America.
Wow. Wow. Oh, that's. Wow, that's huge. That's, again, something I didn't know. So, as little Lee DeGeorge back in the day, were you always a game show fan?
My mother is a wonderful, wonderful woman, and she's always gotten me hooked on game shows forever. Actually, we were talking about this story no more than 3 days ago. Just celebrated my father's 65th birthday. So happy birthday, Dad. You know, I don't think you'll be listening to a game show podcast, but I'm going to make sure you hear this one. When I was young, I would run upstairs when The Price is Right was about to come on. Because the second Rod Roddy said to come on down, I was bounding down those stairs as fast as my little legs could take me so I could sit in front of the couch and play the pricing games. I've been this game show fanatic for as long as I can remember, and really for as long as my parents can remember.
So you said that this was your fifth show. What other shows have you been on?
Again, a couple of these shows are loose interpretations of the word show, depending, you know, your mileage may vary. I was on Minute to Win It with Guy Fieri. I was on Million Second Quiz, that Ryan Seacrest debacle. Wait, did I say debacle? I'm not supposed to say that.
No, you can say it. It's okay. It's okay. It's okay. It was a debacle.
Oh, I remember getting up there at 4 o'clock in the morning and being like, this was a really bad idea.
Yes, it was. But go on.
You know, that was almost like one of those scientific experiments. Like, how can we get a bunch of smart people to stay up for hours upon hours at a time just answering random trivia questions? Yeah, it was just fantastic. Yeah. I was on a show called Let's Ask America, which was the
I remember that show. I was on it too. Didn't do very well, but that's okay.
I also don't know what America likes. And I was on Jeopardy just very recently. I'll talk about that in a moment. But before that, I was on an NPR podcast called Ask Me Another, which was a lot of fun. Again, that could be contestants in a weird way because it's not necessarily – it's a radio show, but you don't really win anything.
Right.
But it's – I've had a lot of opportunity to be in the spotlight.
So how many times did you apply for Jeopardy before you got the call?
I took 2 tests ever, and I got the call on the second test.
Okay. So did you take the online test, or did you take or did you actually do a travel audition?
I took the online test.
Okay.
And around 2 weeks later, I received an email saying that I was being invited to a in-person interview and another test.
Now, full disclosure, I met you for that interview. That was in the summer of last year.
Yes.
Summer of 2017. And I remember you felt you did okay. And I also remember, you know, we had a nice breakfast that Sunday morning. It was a pretty hot day, from what I remember. But so tell us after you get the email that you got the test. Oh, and by the way, before you even do that, please tell everyone why you should take the online test, because we say it every time on the podcast. The worst you can do is not pass. Explain that to everybody.
Ladies and gentlemen, number one is that you don't get better at trivia without getting answers wrong. And sometimes being aware or being cognizant of what you don't know opens up the door for you to learn and become better at this little trivia game. There is zero to lose by taking a test, just to test your skill. Many of the Jeopardy contestants that, you know, the former Jeopardy contestants that I know, they take the test anyway, even though they can't get on the show again.
I've done that, by the way.
Many do. And the reason that they do it is because they want to see if they still got it, if they can still do it. There's nothing to lose. And again, when I was like hardcore studying, there were a lot of holes in my knowledge that I thought I had, but I didn't have. So I needed to shore them up before I got on the show.
So you take the test and you get the email. Tell everybody what that in-person interview is like.
Again, I can only say so much. But when you get into that interview, you meet some amazing casting people. And they take a picture of you. They sit you in a room and they make you take another 50-question test. This time, though, the amount of time in between the questions is shorter.
Okay.
None of the questions that you see on that day, you're allowed to talk about. They're completely off limits.
Gotcha.
And then you are, again, you're there in the room. They will collect your applications and then they will kind of ask you a couple questions and then they'll start a mock game where you'll stand up and you'll ring in. They'll show you the correct way to enunciate and the correct way to call out a category comparatively to calling it out by its full name. They want you to use a keyword and then you're done. They always say that the mock game, how you do in it doesn't matter. They want to see your personality, and they want to see you sell yourself at that time.
When you – okay, so you get there. How did you feel after the interview?
Oh, I felt great. I like talking in front of people, so that portion of the day doesn't bother me. I try to be as charming as possible. I try to smile. I try to have a good time. If you're having a good time, they know you're having a good time. And the casting people are aware of that. And they want people that are having a good time to be on their show. Because if you're having a good time, the viewers are having a good time as well.
So how did you get the call? That call, the one that everybody wants.
So I hope not too many people are actually listening to this that work in the New York City Board of Education. But I wasn't feeling like going to work that day. I woke up that morning and I'm like, I don't feel like it. I'm tired. So I took a sick day.
And okay, by the way, I will be sending this recording to the New York City tomorrow. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
Pain in my butt. So I took a sick day, and I woke up a little bit late, had myself a cup of coffee, had myself some breakfast, went to the gym, hung out at the gym, swam some laps, really a real leisurely day. I then leave the gym, find a wonderful restaurant, order my food for lunch, and my phone rings, and it's from Culver City. The food hasn't come yet, but my phone is in my hands, and I'm shaking. Because I know what the call is.
You knew it was the call.
I knew it. So I pick up the phone, and they're like, hello, is this Lee DeGeorge? I'm like, yes, it is. And then they're like, well, this is so-and-so from Jeopardy. And my response involves expletives and numerous expletives directly after that. And the person on the other line laughed hysterically and said, that's what we want to see. That type of infinite love. That's what they want to see. And I wound up not eating any of my food directly after that. And I spent $20 on food that I never ate, and I called everyone I knew at that point.
I remember getting the call now, but here's the interesting thing. You didn't get the call. You got a specialty call, which is different.
I did. Now, I got a specialty call.
You know, which is even – in a way, it's even harder to get than the normal call. Do you feel any different getting that particular call instead of getting the normal – Jeopardy contestant call?
I don't think so. Actually, I will now kind of share with you something that I almost take offense to about this type of thing, because people would think you have it really great, that you're in a, you know, like you got the call, you have it pretty great, you're in a teacher tournament, and the teacher tournament's a special thing, and it is. But I will tell you that people all over the internet talk about how inferior we are to the other contestants. Like, the only way we were able to get on the show was due to the fact that we were teachers.
Well, that's the internet. We all know this, you know. And what did you say? What was the quote you said about Twitter the other day? Twitter is the refuge of angry people.
I will. Hold on. I typed it in. I'll look it up right now.
Because it's a great quote, because it's the truth.
I had posted this in a special forum. I said, one thing I can unequivocally say after my Jeopardy episode aired, Twitter is a wasteland of angry people.
It's the truth. It is the absolute truth. And you see it on social media, on the Jeopardy boards, on Twitter, on Jeopardy Reddit. You have a bunch of angry, keyboard, jealous so-and-so's, I'm going to keep it clean because we have to here, about this stuff. Because remember, being on Jeopardy is a very, very, very exclusive club. A very exclusive club. Only about 17,000 people have done that. Less than that, I am guessing.
It's an honor to be a part of the family.
Now,
and being a member of the teacher tournament is something very special to me, because it's the equivalent of not only being recognized as a pretty darn good trivia player, but also being recognized as someone who's making a difference in society. And that really matters a lot to me.
We'll get to that in a bit. So you get the call. So what were – now, for those who don't know, and again, you have two daughters, Zoe and Bryn. They are 6 and 4? 6 and 5?
They are. They are 7 and 5 now.
Seven and five. Okay. What was their reaction to it? Your family's reaction to it? The whole nine yards.
I mean, everyone was excited. Everyone was really, you know, really cool and really excited. But I've been on game shows before, and for some people, I mean, not me, but for some people that know me and love me, they've heard this before and they're just not as excited as I thought they were going to be.
Yeah.
Like, oh, another one. Yay. Don't screw it up, Lee. You know?
Well, you know, it's funny. It's the same thing. I always get that when I win a sweepstakes prize. Okay, you want another one? Yay. Yeah, same thing. I know exactly what you mean.
It's like, oh, okay. So Bryn and Zoe were both super excited because they have seen Alex Trebek before on the TV. Because, you know, they watch it with me, and they kind of view him as part of the family. So when I was leaving, Bryn drew a picture of the Jeopardy set and drew where Alex Trebek was and me winning the game, and, you know, she's all cute. And then she crosses Alex Trebek off because she had, you know, decided that Alex Trebek had to be a little girl. So I carry that with me on the chance that I would be able to give that to Alex Trebek and show him that my lovely daughter, Bryn, turned him into a little girl instead of an older Canadian man.
So what was your preparation like?
Oh, it was ridiculous. And I don't want to bury the lead too much, but I spent much more time shoring up knowledge and much less time fiddling around with what a buzzer would feel like in my hands.
And I have to ask, when we get to that, do you think that was a mistake?
I have a lot to say about that.
Okay.
Let's not bury that lead.
We're not going to bury that lead. So go back to your study.
I spent hours creating lists of things that I needed to know. I would shout out Andy Saunders for a moment, but he has this Jeopardy archive, J archive, where every single question is basically archived and you can access them. So what I did was I would choose something like a list of the most asked about authors on Jeopardy. And I would query that up and I would pull some names, and then I would look up the individual questions that were asked about, let's say, Nathaniel Hawthorne. And what winds up happening is that certain things come up more often than others. For instance, the Scarlet Letter, obviously. But another thing that comes up is the relationship between Nathaniel Hawthorne and a president of the United States. And that came up on Jeopardy maybe 5, 6, 7 times. about how Franklin Pierce is, I believe it's Franklin Pierce. It's been a while since I went over this stuff, but I believe it's Franklin Pierce is the one that is best friends with Nathaniel Hawthorne. And that came up as a Jeopardy clue, not once, not twice, not three, not four, came up like five times. So now it's making a list of not only trivia, but things that are cross-referenced with how often they were being asked about on Jeopardy. And I did that for literature. I did that for geography. And I did that for history.
And that you took it incredibly seriously.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. But I will tell you that I am an infinitely better trivia player right now than I've ever been in my entire life.
Well, yeah. So you study, you practice, and you go out to Culver City. So as you're going out there, how are you feeling? What's your feeling like? And tell within reason, of course, what your studio day was like, things like that.
So I felt good. I felt really good. I had studied. I had friends that had helped me study. I was really feeling good about the categories I had really spent the time studying on, because there were certain holes in my knowledge. For example, I'm a wonderful English language arts teacher, but I don't teach big boy and big girl literature. So a lot of that literature was lost on me, and I needed to shore that up, and I did. So when I was heading out to Culver City, I was feeling like I was going to win the entire thing. I'm not going to mince words there. I was feeling great about it. Mm-hmm. And I get into the studio, and I'm loose, and everyone else is tight. And part of the reason was I've been there before, and they hadn't. There is one gentleman there. His name is Greg.
Yes.
He's talking to me. It's cool. And, you know, we're all just – I'm hanging out. Greg is one of the Culver City guys, and he's talking to me. And everyone else is just really keeping everything close to the vest. It's nice. Because I'm trying to loosen everybody up. I'm having a good time. And then we get into the studio. And we go through run-throughs. And we take pictures. And we start juggling apples, because that's something that they like to do for the media.
Juggling apples? Oh, that's right, because it's the teacher's tournament. Yeah.
Right. I mean, we do a bunch of silly stuff. And then we sit down, and we are basically told everything we need to know about the buzzer system. And then we get called up to do a couple run-throughs with the buzzers. And we answer some trivia questions, nothing mind-blowing, but we're up there, we're ringing in with the buzzer, we understand what it is to feel to be behind the podium. And then they pull us off. They put us back into the green room for a moment. They call out three names, and it's go time.
Now, you're practicing. You practice. How did you feel on the buzzer?
Fine. It was exactly what I expected it to be. There's a whole system that they talk about. I don't know if I can talk about it, so I'm not going to. But basically, you're waiting for a light.
That's correct. Yes. We all know. For those who aren't Jeopardy, you and I both know what you're talking about. The light system. Yes.
Right. So there's a light system, and you can only ring in when that light goes on. And I had many Jeopardy friends to give me one piece of advice. They said to me, Lee, best piece of advice we can give you is that you can't wait for those lights. If you see the light, it's already too late. Someone's worked on the cadence of Alex talking and knows approximately when that light is going to go off after he reads the last word. So my goal was to not look at the lights as much as possible, but to focus on the cadence. In the opening, practices, I was beating everyone on the buzzer. I was in tune with the cadence. It was exactly where I expected it to be. So it was real good. I had done some good buzzer work. They call us, they switch us out. I was feeling good. You know, there was nothing about the buzzer that struck me as strange. So I felt like I was going to do really well.
So you're picked first.
I was.
Did that bother you?
No.
Not at all.
Not at all. I'm like, let's go. Again, I felt like this wasn't my first game show. And the two people next to me are wonderful. But this is their first time ever on a stage. So I'm going to try to buzz quick. I'm going to try to pile on as quickly as I can.
So you get made up. You're in the middle spot. The music starts up. What's going through your head?
It's actually more interesting because you're more nervous before the music goes on. Once the music goes on, it's gone. Those nerves are gone and you're ready to go. It's just the endorphins are running, you know, it hits, the adrenaline hits, and it's go time. You don't even have that real moment to be nervous at that point.
So you're going through round one and you do somewhat decently. And
you can call that somewhat decently. I'm gonna interrupt you now. I was doing pretty well. I had a really bad neg midway through the Jeopardy round where I had given up too much information. I had said the word cuckoo clock, and
I said cuckoo clock myself, by the way.
Right, and it's a rightful neg. But if I just said the word clock, I'm not in third place after the Jeopardy round. I'm in first place. So that's how tightly wound that situation was at that point. So yeah, I was in third place with a very large third place score. But at the same token, I felt like I was one word short. You know, I said one word too much. Of being in a very good position going into Double Jeopardy.
And then Double Jeopardy happened. I'm laughing, and I don't mean to, because you just – what happened?
Okay. So this is the part of practice, the part – I'm going to give you one of the major, major pieces here. If you're going to be on Jeopardy, this is the part of the interview you should be listening to and nothing else, because this part of the interview is what you need to know. Everything that people tell you about studying, it's good. It is definitely not what you should be working on. What happened in Double Jeopardy is that I looked at these categories and they sucked. They were not good categories for me. The colleges of Oxford made me shake. I was upset. And then what happened was my confidence started to wane. So I'm gripping that buzzer in my hand. And the first one pops up and I know it. And I buzz in and I don't get the ring. Now that happened quite a bit in round one also, so that's not anything new. But then I look at the board and I start seeing my categories where I need to make my money go off the board. And things that are left are empires, and that's world history is not my strength. And the colleges of Oxford. And I'm like, ugh, I don't know much about that either. So you start pressing because you know that really that 30 just got knocked down to 20 clues.
So you, in other words, would you say that you played on tilt in a poker sense?
Yes. So when – just to spin it a little bit differently, I felt like I was playing a 20-clue Jeopardy round with 30 clues on the board because there were going to be 10 that I just couldn't answer. And more on that in a second, but So I got into my head and I'm gripping that buzzer just a little bit tighter. And what wound up happening
and was, by the way, I have the categories if you want, let's just go over them if you don't mind.
Sure, go ahead.
That would be Sounds Criminal But Isn't, Movies in the Sky, Colleges of Oxford, Empires, Academia, D in quotations, and Literary Mashups.
Okay.
So go on.
So let me take two steps back. So the two categories that I were considering dead to me at that point in time was the Colleges of Oxford and Empires. World history is just not my strength. And the gentleman next to me, I knew, was a world history buff. So I knew that was going to be real hard to count on much score there. I knew that I'm pretty good at wordplay categories. So I felt good about Sounds Criminal But Isn't. And I felt good about the Academia. And I had done a lot of literary studying. So the literature titles was something that I thought was going to be good. Movies is hit or miss for me because after 2010 – I haven't watched too many movies that aren't about kid movies.
That aren't either brightly colored or about unicorns, ponies, or robots,
right.
You know, or whatever.
Right. So that was going to be the category that I don't know necessarily what was going to happen. But I do best in wordplay categories. So I call out Academia for 1200. And the clue is so easy. It was distance learning. But I am already in my head at that point, and I'm looking at the category title, and the D is in the middle of Academia. So I'm sitting there, and I'm trying to figure out a word that has a D in the middle, not a D in the front. And I couldn't pull anything, so I didn't buzz in. That moment is such a silly thing, because the I should have listened more closely when the categories were being read, because he said that that D in quotation marks means, you know, it's the first letter. But I'm sitting there because since the D is in the middle, the physical middle of Academia, I was looking for a word in the middle. So I threw away one of my clues already. So that 20 just got in my mind down to 19. Then down to 18, then down to 17, down to 16. And then you start gripping that buzzer a little bit tighter. And you started to really try to get that cadence down and try to get that exact moment. But you don't. What happens was... Go ahead.
And I was just saying, and you wore it on your sleeve that your cadence was off.
I was a half a second early every single time. And the real issue is the definition of crazy here, because instead of, you know, definition of crazy is doing the same thing and expecting a different outcome. I was doing the same thing and I was expecting a different outcome. I didn't adjust the cadence at that point in time. Like, hey, jerk, you're early. Wait. I didn't do that. I'm just like, I'm going to get it next time. And I make the same mistake again because I'm gripping that buzzer just a little bit tighter and I'm trying to anticipate it because I need to get in.
Combined with the fact that you also went with two players who were very, very good.
I think that's an understatement on how good they are. I think I had them both beat in pop culture, but I think in general, I have most people beat in pop culture. That's what I do. But their academic knowledge was superior to mine. Mm. They both had significant chops trivia wise, and they both had pretty quick trigger fingers too. They were both forces to be reckoned with. I felt I got a real tough draw.
So you are pretty much, you know, at the end of you're down 5,200. Claire has 1,426. Where's your head at that point?
I don't care about Claire's score. Claire's score doesn't matter to me. At that point in time, I'm already playing a game where is the wild card going to be? I'm not winning this match. This match is out of reach. There's no way I'm playing for the win if we're talking rational actors and knowing them and knowing how smart they are, they've probably both done their research and were going to be rational actors instead of irrational actors. Basically, if I thought they were going to be rational, neither of them were going to wager anything because they were both in very comfortable positions. I mean, Claire might have wagered 1,000 or so, but Larry didn't need to wager anything because he was at – how much was he at? 18?
Larry was at 20,600.
20,600, yeah. He had no reason because 20,000, even if Claire had doubled through and was playing as an irrational actor, he would be fine with a $20,000 wild cards position.
Right.
So I'm assuming he's wagering zero. Claire has 13 or so.
14.4, actually.
14.4. So Claire shouldn't be wagering anything. If she wants to wager 1,000, she could, or in my mind, somewhere like that, to help her wild card. But she doesn't want to wager too much to put her out of it. So using the rational actor thought, I knew that both of them were going to be above me no matter what they were going to wager. So I didn't even think about them. There was no strategy there. The question was, what was the magic number going to be?
And so you get a Final Jeopardy question that is absolutely brutal. It is brutal. The category is U.S. cities, and it says, this city, also the title of a film that won 2 Oscars, was named for a businessman known for 19th century transportation. Now, you have to tell the story about your post and why this is important. You made a post after the game was over.
So let's actually talk about the thought process of Final Jeopardy at this point. I'm super stoked when U.S. histories comes up because – I'm sorry, U.S. cities comes up because – geography is probably my best area, trivia-wise. Really good at it. Stoked, because if I double through, I'm going to have more than 10,000, and that's probably going to see me through to the wild card. So I was pretty stoked about that. And then the question – and then the answer appears. And it's like, damn.
Yeah.
So – the first thing you think, well, Philadelphia is not named after a person, so it can't be Philadelphia. So you continue to think. And you have 30 seconds, and you've already wasted 5 of that thinking about Philadelphia. Then you waste the next 10 thinking about what the hell are you going to do next. So you have 15 seconds left, and you realize that that camera is about to hit you, and you're still looking at the screen like an idiot. So you go ahead, and you're like, name a movie that's named after – that has the name of a city that's also the name of a person. And I said San Francisco. That's a 1934-ish movie. I believe Clark Gable's in it. And I was pretty sure it was at least nominated for an Academy Award. I'm like, it's the wrong answer, but I'm going to write it. There's at least some sort of right parts to it. And it was wrong. And no one else was even close. I was the only one who said something that was close enough to not be a ridiculous guess. But I'm leaving the studio after. And I've lost. I know that I have no chance of making it through because I had wagered it all and it was gone. My brother calls me and he's like, okay, I'll pick you up. We'll go out, get some food. He's like, you've been walking for a couple blocks. Tell me where you are. Tell me what landmarks you see. And then I look around, and across the street is a Wells Fargo bank. And I groan.
Because the answer, for those who don't know, was Fargo.
Fargo. Because, again, proving that you can study as much as you want, but you don't know everything. I never knew Fargo was a person. I thought it was showing how far Wells would go. I thought it was a play on words for Wells's shipping company, Wells Fargo.
No, Fargo was a guy, as we
I know that now.
As we all know, yeah. So you leave, and you personally are getting $5,000, right?
$5,000 for myself, $2,500 for my school.
And what are you doing? What are you, as you said? I know you said it on the TV, but what are you doing with the $2,500?
Well, we have a very large special education population in my school, and in order to serve them better, I'm getting some tablets for them, so they can have some more hands-on learning and possibly be able to grasp concepts that they wouldn't be able to without some sort of assistive technology.
Very, very cool. So you leave the studio, or at least you go to the green room, and of course, I'm assuming you are required to watch both days of the tournament by – then again, we're taping this in week one, so no spoilers here. But were you required to watch both days of the tape?
You are not required to.
But you did, of course.
Of course I did.
And let me ask you something. Without spoiling anything, do you think you would have done well?
We have a bunch of fierce competitors in this competition, and you're seeing that unfolding right now. What I learned is that every single person in this teacher's tournament, the damn good trivia players. And depending on stack, depending on board, I could have probably won the thing. But so could 14 other people. So, you know, do I feel like I could have done well with this exact stack? Yeah, probably.
So, you get home and, you know, so, in other words, what has the reaction been, and do you feel you are – what has been the reaction been to your appearance?
Hysterical. Everyone's happy. Everyone's thrilled. It doesn't happen very often that someone goes 33 consecutive responses without – signaling first, which is crazy talk because it doesn't happen. But the way that my hand was being held, I was just holding my buzzer a specific way. Anyone who was watching it on TV could see exactly what I knew and exactly what I didn't know based on my buzzes, because I was buzzing for 3/4 of the questions.
Yeah. But you know, also notice that in the forum that we are both in, you've been getting reactions for the most part that's like, aha, I've been there. You know, that. So you're not alone.
Oh, absolutely not.
You're not, absolutely not. Not alone. So a couple of more questions before, you know, we wrap up here. First of all, what are your plans for the money?
Well, $5,000 isn't going to break, you know, the worldly bank for me, because I got bills to pay and a lot of it's going to that. But I am going to the Newport Folk Festival this year, and I'm going to the Meadows Hip Hop Festival in when that gets announced. And those are my two festivals for the year, and I'm going to be going on those two on the dime of Jeopardy this year instead of on my own. So that's nice.
That's cool. That's cool. Here's a few questions that we ask everybody. Okay.
Okay.
All right. So here we go. Number one, favorite game show of all time besides Jeopardy?
Who Wants to Be a Millionaire?
Ah, favorite host of all time?
Ha. I'm very, very partial to Bob Eubanks.
Interesting. That's an interesting choice. Why?
He's so funny. There's no man in the business that is more charming ever than Bob Eubanks?
If you could bring back a format that hasn't been brought back, that or has been brought back, to bring back onto the game show landscape, what would it be?
I love Trivia Trap, probably my favorite game show of all time. And before they changed the entire thing midstream, which was terrible directly after that, and there was no point talking about that season. The idea of avoiding the whammy in a trivia setting made it – it's a format that I really liked. And then forgive me for a second because I can't remember the name of it, but there was another one that was hosted by Peter Tamarkin.
Wipeout?
Why, that's the one. Again, that same idea of kind of avoiding the wrong answers.
Mm-hmm.
I think that in a trivia setting is probably one of the coolest things that no one's doing right now.
If you could host any game show, what would it be?
Double Dare.
Really?
I would host the hell out of Double Dare. I think that'd be so much fun. And the idea of kids having fun, but remembering that trivia is a cool thing and knowing things will get you points and these crazy prizes. I think Double Dare would be like the ultimate hosting gig.
Okay. Last thing, it's lead time. Anything you want to say, anything you know we haven't covered, what would you like to say?
In life, I'm going to get all soapboxy for a second. I'm sorry, everyone. But in life, you have a choice of either being in the game or being on the sidelines. Choose to be in the game.
Wow. Simple and easy. First of all, again, I'm actually going to give a plug to the charity that you guys have been playing for all this week, which is farmers.com/thank-americas-teachers, and that's the grant that you got for your school, and you could get up to $100,000 for any school that you want to, and I think that's a great, because teachers need it better than anybody, you know that. Lee, it's been an absolute blast. Thank you so much for giving of your time, and good luck in the future. By the way, is there any are you done with game shows, just last question, or do you want to do something else?
Well, I don't know when this is going to air, but look for me or listen for me on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Aha! There we go.
I'm the contestant. I'm one of the contestants this week. So if you are listening, and it would be May 12th, I'll be on that show. I'll be the first person there. I'll be on playing the first game, but if you're listening to this after the fact, you can always download the podcast for that also and hear me make a fool of myself on – no, I'm not done. I'm never going to be done. I need – it's fun. I like competing. I like the idea of getting up there, making an ass out of yourself on TV, having stories to tell other people. Why would anyone be done with that?
You know what? What more could be said? Lee, again, thank you very much. This is Jason Block here from Spectrum1.net here with a WLTI Extra. Lee DeGeorge, congratulations on all your success and continued success.
Thank you.
The preceding podcast has been a presentation of Spectrum One. online and on demand at spectrumone.net.